Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is a very special one, isn't it, Stone?
I always look forward to this one. This is the ProWin special. We have some ladies with us from that organization. We're going to get a chance to visit with June Klein a little bit later in the program, and also, still yet to be determined whether we're related or not, Aaron Stone. But first up, during this very special segment, we have with us the Chief Now Officer of Working On Your Now. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Miss Lori Beard Daly. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much for cheering me on with that Chief Now Officer. That's one of my favorite titles.
Favorite titles? Yes. What are some other titles? Yeah.
Well, I've had Chief Operating Officer.
Boring.
Yes, I've had Chief Executive Officer. So I like Chief Now Officer because it really coincides with what I'm doing now.
So what are you doing now?
I have a women's platform called Working On Your Now, and it's an educational platform that equips women with practical tools that aid in their commitment to rediscover themselves and ultimately reach their true potential in the areas of finance, career, personal growth, spirituality, and health and wellness. These are the areas that we find are a lot of times put to the wayside because we're so busy working on everyone else's now, and these are important things that we need to be doing for ourselves.
Now, what makes you uniquely qualified to help women in this area?
Other than the fact that I am a woman.
So that's all it takes? So I can help men. I'm a guy, so any man I'm good for?
No, there's actually a little story behind that. Right before the recession hit, I owned an advertising and PR company for about 13 years, and so my business got caught up in the recession, and therefore we ultimately it had its demise, unfortunately. And so during that time, I started actually networking and talking with a lot of women that were going through some of the same things, some of the same challenges. And as you get together and you start talking more with people, you start learning that there's like a common thread. And these were some of the topics that came out. You know, what is going to be my next thing that I'm going to do as far as my career? Am I going to start another business? Am I going to go find employment? What are my finances looking like since they've been hit so hard with this area? You know, what do I want to do differently, whether or not, you know, I still have children at home, you know, whether or not I'm a stay-at-home mom, whether or not I'm an empty nester? How does it look in terms of just what do I want to do for me? And that was dealing with personal growth. And where am I just within my spirit? What are my beliefs now? Where am I trying to find myself? So that's how Working On Your Now just started to evolve, was through conversation that I was having with other women that were kind of on the same journey that I was on.
But the first conversation was with yourself.
It was with myself. It was with myself. And ironically, the name came from a program that my husband and I were watching about a nurse talking about people not taking care of themselves, and primarily it was women. And the comment she made was, if more women just did things now instead of, you know, working on things later, then, you know, we would be a lot farther ahead. Because again, like I said, we do a lot of things for others and sometimes we forget ourselves. And so that was how the name Working On Your Now evolved.
Right. Like when you're on an airplane, they tell you to put the mask on yourself first,
yes,
not on the person next to you.
That's
right.
That's a really good example. Yes.
So now, when you change directions, I guess, left the advertising world and working on this initiative, what has been the biggest challenges for you?
You know what? I think the biggest challenge has been exactly that, in terms of I have been doing advertising and PR for so long. It was really rebranding myself and believing that I could make this happen. I think the biggest challenge was just myself. What I found as I started talking with other women about the platform that I wanted to do, I started finding that there was a lot of support there and that this was something that women were looking for. So the challenge, I think, was just really deciding that this is something that I was going to do, something that was needed, and something that I could do. And so therefore, just stepping out on the belief in myself and just faith.
Now, ProWin, has that been part of your marketing, or you were always a member of ProWin? How does that come into play?
Well, actually, I just joined ProWin this summer, and again, that came from networking with women and talking about what I'm, you know, setting out to do with my business. And it was recommended that I come, and it's so ironic because since I started with ProWin, I've met so many unbelievable women, and actually two have been helping me with pushing another a major event that I'm having at the end of this month.
So now, working on your Now is not just an internet platform, it's also live events?
Yes, it is. The way we start off, all of my events are quarterly. So for instance, this quarter, we're dealing with health and wellness. And as you know, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be having a health and wellness luncheon at the Buckhead Club on October 29th at 11:30. And my panel of experts are four women in the health and industry experts, everywhere from diabetes. We have a medical doctor that's OBGYN. She also deals with anti-aging. I have someone else that deals with nutrition, a certified professional trainer. And then the moderator is a news anchor person from 11 Alive. So with that, one of the things that I'm really into is not making just a rah-rah session where women come one time and they leave and then they don't have a plan. So afterwards, there's going to be post-activities that they can actually get information from the panelists that are there. And then we follow up in the month of November with another workshop. It'll be a workshop where we'll be talking about specific diets. And then December, we'll be following up with another workshop that deals with, you know, now that you're on this diet, what else do you need to do to make sure you keep your body in shape? And so, and in between that time, we'll also be having online webinars. So it's a...
So the offline and the online kind of work together to keep a person compliant and support them throughout the
exactly.
help them achieve whatever goal they're trying to achieve.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Where do we sign up?
You can sign up right after the show.
See that? One at a time, right?
Yes.
So now, have you done, you said you started this recently, have you actually had offline events yet?
Yes, we've been having webinars.
And so you've had the online event.
Yes, I've had the offline event. We had actually, and it's so ironic that you're asking me this, I had it was called Women Straight Talk, and it was held in June. And it was basically kind of like a focus group for women just to understand, to make sure that I was going in the right direction.
Because you're an advertising person. Yeah. You knew a focus group had to come into play at some point,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And it was great because I got some really candid remarks to the point that we even redesigned the homepage of our website.
Wow, based on that?
Yeah, based on that. Yeah, because when you work like for yourself, a lot of times you think you know it all. And like you said,
it's your business. You're the boss, right?
I know. But many times we don't see the forest for the trees because we're in the forest. Mm-hmm. So when you bring in other people that are objective and don't have any
There's no agenda.
They really speak out. And so they shared with me what their thoughts were on the homepage. They shared with me what would actually make them want to buy into an organization like this. And it was really about, I want to network with other women that are going through what I'm going through, and I want to be able to have a plan. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just meet you and then I'm not able to reconnect again. I want to stay connected.
Right, so that's why the importance of not these one-off things that are just one-time events. You want
exactly.
it to be kind of a recurring place, a safe place to come, to be supported and to be held accountable.
Exactly. And the plan is to eventually, like I said, with this quarter, it's health and wellness. In January, we kick off our financial series. But I want to get to the point where whatever place you are in your life as a woman, you don't necessarily have to wait till the third
quarter.
Right,
I got to wait till next July in order
exactly.
to connect again.
Exactly.
Right.
So we want to keep it moving and keep it fluid.
So now, this online platform, is it so there's forums, there's different activities that they can go in to plug in wherever they need and whatever help they need?
Yes, that is one of the, what I do is I have strategic partners with Working On Your Now that have various areas of expertise. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Because obviously I'm great, but I can't be all to everyone.
Don't be
right?
modest. Don't be modest.
Just kidding. So, so that's the plan, is to just have other women help move the platform.
And they're the curator of whatever specialty that
exactly.
they're working on.
Exactly.
And then was that difficult to find and identify and vet these experts?
You know what? It has been a very interesting, I guess, the word I'm looking for. It's almost been like a spiritual journey for me, for lack of a better word, because it's almost like when you ask the universe and you've been given a mission, things just start coming to you. It's the mm-hmm. strangest thing. And that's what I've been finding, because women that I've never met have said, I've heard so-and-so talk about this organization. I'm calling you to see if you need help. And I'm going, are you kidding me? Do I need help? Yeah, I need help. You know, so it's been, you know, I want to be a part of it. And so, but at the same time, what I love about it, it's not just about, I'm not the face of Working On Your Now. I mean, even if you went to the website, you would never know that I'm behind it unless you went to the About Us. Because my goal is to lift other women. You know, my partners, they're you know, they're not my employees. So it helps grow their business too. It helps grow their network.
Right.
So it's not just about Lori Beer Daily. It's about how can I help you expand what you're trying to do. And
right.
It's always in one of those five areas. So
now that you're involved with ProWin, has this helped you? Has it fast-forwarded anything?
It has, because actually two of the women are from ProWin that are on my panel, and I never met them, and it was so bizarre. So it was
just
been
being
awesome.
Involved with the group and then asking the group or sharing your vision. It attracted other women
It did. And it continues on, because even one of my sponsors fell through, and it's so ironic. So I just started picking up the phone, and before I knew it, I was getting return callbacks. Like, Whole Foods is going to be one of my sponsors. Seasons 52 Restaurant is going to be one of my sponsors. And I'm going, you got to be kidding me. But they see, and I think what also happens is the information that I send out is applicable to what they're looking to do.
Right.
That helps. It's on target. So it's not like I'm having like a jazz concert. You
right.
know, or
it's unrelated
like
to what they're trying to accomplish. Right,
right. Right. And because it is women, you know, that's another reason too, that they're focusing mm-hmm. on that. So I've been very fortunate. And
you ever worked with, in your previous life, were you ever working with women's groups and building this, or this is the first time you've even kind of plugged into this world this way?
It's interesting. I think when I listen to that question, I've always worked with women. I have three kids, so I've always been on like the PTA boards.
Right.
I've always been the homeroom mom. But at the same time, I'm also an author. So the novel that I have written in the past, it was dealing with women. So a lot of times I'm talking with women. But I find out, even with my business, when I had my advertising PR business, I think there's something about with women, we just kind of connect.
Right,
that's
collaborate,
what it is.
Right.
Yeah, and
it's natural. It's not
exactly,
like forced.
Exactly. So that's one of the things that I feel that is a gift, that I feel like I'm pretty intuitive, and I think in general most women are for the mm-hmm. most part. I think everyone is intuitive. It's just some of us really understand when we get it, and it takes some of us a little bit longer. So I think from that probably has been the draw, because I've been able to kind of tap in without even really trying to tap in.
Right.
It's just natural. So.
And this group, it's starting here in Atlanta, but your vision is beyond Atlanta, right? This is a worldwide group.
It's going to be global.
Global.
Yeah, it's going to be global. We're starting here locally. We're planning to move regionally, nationally, and then we're doing global. So that's the vision.
So what do you need now?
Right now, I'm just taking one step at a time, and I just need people to register for this event that we're having on October 29th at 11:30 at
the
Buckeye
Club.
We got one.
We got one in our pocket here.
So. Go to workingonyournow.com and register for the event. So that's right now. And just to stay engaged and, you know, let me know, you know, are we doing things right? Is there something else that you're looking for? Because there are a lot of other organizations out there that gear towards women, but I like to pride myself in the fact that I feel like what makes us different is that it's consistent ongoing training for that specific area that you're looking to do.
Right.
So, and we're not necessarily focusing on just the businesswoman. We're focusing on women.
Right.
And so that's the other way that I kind of like to use my organization as being a little bit unique.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, is there a website, Facebook, where are you guys at?
Yeah, we're at workingonyournow.com, and it sounds just like it is spelled working, W-R-I-K-I-N-G, onyournow.com. And then we have a Twitter page, and it's at R-U-W-O-Y-N. And then, of course, Facebook is Working On Your Now.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. We got to have you back because I want to learn more about your protege experience with Turner Broadcasting.
Okay, yeah.
And I want to dive into this column that you were writing on internal communications with Delta. So will you come back and visit with us sometime?
I would love to. Just have me back. Let me know.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
And hang with us here. We're going to visit with a couple more guests. Okay?
I would love to. I'll be right here. Thank you.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us an attorney. Can you use the word barrister in the United States? That's the word I wanted to use.
No, we're not barristers okay. in the United States.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm glad I asked.
I like it, though.
She's an attorney with Bovis, Kyle, Birch, and Medlin. Please join me in welcoming to the show Miss Erin Stone. What did you learn in that last segment, Miss Erin?
Oh, well, first of all, that event coming up sounds terrific.
Hope and you will join us.
I'm going to try and do that. I'm going to try and do that. And, I was thinking that I might like to talk to you about being on your panel, too. Okay. It sounds like you work with a lot of women in transition.
I do.
And that's a lot of what I do as well, because I'm a family law attorney, which means that I represent people in their divorce cases. Which is a big time of transition, where a lot of people need a lot of support, and it sounds like your group is doing that.
Yes, we'll definitely talk. Great.
So now, a family law attorney, but it's primarily divorce? Is that
right? Being a family law attorney means I represent people in
That's a branding thing, right? Do you call it family law?
It sounds a little nicer than being a divorce lawyer. But I'm a divorce lawyer. I represent people in their divorce cases.
Is it only the women's side or the men?
No.
Or equal opportunity?
I am equal opportunity. Whoever needs me is the person I represent.
So now... But you don't need a lawyer to get divorced in Georgia, or do you?
It's not required, but most people do need a lawyer. The legal system is pretty complicated, and they really need help navigating the system. And there's a lot of issues that have to be resolved in a divorce.
Like what you see those billboards, like you get divorced for a Starbucks gift card or something like
right. And I'm not here to say anything against those lawyers that do that, but I think what you sort of get what you pay for. It's a matter of a level of service.
But what's that like kind of thing you think you know but you don't know that if you're going to go that path?
Well, there's a lot of things. I mean, getting divorced is a lot about planning for your future. Mm-hmm. Your finances will be divided. There's a matter of figuring out the appropriate amount of support so that you can pay your bills on both sides. And also there's a matter of looking to the future of how your children are going to be taken care of and how often you're going to see them. And so there's a lot of legal ramifications to all that. And there's a lot of just looking towards the future and figuring out what's right for your family.
Now, is there something a person could do, like if they're thinking about this, how early on the process should they talk to a lawyer? Like the first second you're thinking about it?
I think as soon as you are thinking that's the right thing for you, you probably need to consult with a lawyer. A lot of times I do see people early in the process, even if they're not sure what they want. And often I can just help them think through, planning for that and figuring out what their goals are and what they really want. And sometimes they end up deciding not to get divorced, but often they're coming to see me because there is a serious problem and they need help.
And is there a way to do this that is less chaotic than other ways?
There absolutely is. Often if I can get people in early before things get ugly between them, we can do things by agreement. We can have settlement negotiations. We can take their case to a process called mediation. Have almost all issues settled by agreement before they ever have to step into a courtroom, which is something that's really scary to people, I think.
Now, is there something that, what are the triggers that make it super adversarial? Like, is it because they got married, they must have liked each other at some point, right?
Right. But
like
often,
I had to change.
Right. By the time they get to me, they've often forgotten that they like each other. But some of the triggers, I think, sometimes it's a matter of a disagreement over money. Sometimes it's that, especially in recent times, it's that money has gotten tight and things are very stressful at home. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's bigger issues, like somebody is cheating. Sometimes there's an addiction problem that's going on. And those issues sometimes can't be solved together.
Right. Now, how do you counsel them through that? Do you have a team that you can help direct them? Because I'm sure you're not qualified to help them if there's an addiction problem. Like, you can't fix that, right?
No. That's not my department.
Right. But so do you must build a team of experts, I would have guessed, to lean on in that.
I do. And one of the things I really think I offer my clients that's very valuable to them is I have relationships with professionals all around Atlanta that can help them through these times and be a resource to them. So often I have some therapists that I work with that are very helpful.
Like in different areas of specialty?
In different areas of specialty.
Like somebody might be good at addiction but not good with children or something
like that. And, you know, by the same token, I have accountants that I work with, financial advisors, all different kinds of professionals that people often need. And sometimes, you know, I may be the only resource that person has.
But you're kind of the point person, right?
I am.
Because you know everybody and they don't know anybody.
That's right. That's right. Everything from your therapist to, I mean, I've had people call me back to find out who can come and, you know, fix something in their house because they haven't figured out, you know, how to do that on their own.
Oh, because like sometimes they have the house now and they've never had to take care of it before.
Right. That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Who's going to fix the roof? It's like, and they call you.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, it's so I try to be full service and wow. as much as I can.
Up there fixing roofs.
I will not climb up on your roof. But I, you know, as I said, I try to have a network of professionals that are trustworthy, that are good, that are helpful. And I think that helps my clients.
Now, if the couple has children, that adds a level of complexity and difficulty and emotional challenges. How do you help them play out scenarios? How does that kind of work when there's a custody involved?
That is probably the most complicated part of a divorce case because, first of all, it's packed with emotion. And second of all, I think people have trouble thinking towards the future, you know, past the age of their children at the time of the divorce. Mm-hmm. And so I try to help people look towards the future. I give them a lot of suggested plans of schedules for how this child is going to see both parents and be involved in both parents' lives. And also try and help them with the emotional side of it because it's a big change when you go from all living in one household as a family
right.
to two households. And so that takes some adjustment.
Now, is it at one point, like when I was younger, if there was a divorce, like usually the kids live with the mother. Is it the same way nowadays?
Not as much. The courts look to the best interests of the children. Mm-hmm. And often the focus is on what that child is accustomed to, who was the primary caretaker during the marriage. And because dads are so much more involved now than they were maybe if you look back 15, 20 years, sometimes that ends up being the dad or sometimes couples share custody. But it just depends on what has happened in that home up till then mm-hmm. and what the parties think is best for their child.
Now, that must be a challenging conversation for you, right? Because you got to really separate your client's needs to what the child's needs are, right?
Yes.
At least open their mind to, hey, you know, you got to look at this a little, not as through your own lens here.
Right. And what I try and do with the clients is, of course, listen to what they want and need and try and get that for them, but also do some reality testing with them as to what they can handle as far as time with that child and responsibility with that child. Because, you know, people come to me who have very challenging careers
right.
and I try to make sure that
I want to be this hard charging executive and I'm going to be traveling Europe and all this stuff. And I also want the kid, you know, right?
That's right.
Like
that's right. So with that kind of a person, I try and work out a schedule for them that, you know, gives them as much time as possible with their child. But at the same time, respects that need for them to have that powerful career and you know, gives them the ability to still do that because that's important too.
Right.
As you move forward.
Now, in your, like, what's a good day for you?
What's a good day?
Because, I mean, these are difficult.
It's got to be mediation. Wouldn't you prefer mediation?
Right. I mean,
true?
A good day is to get a settlement for a client that is, you know, as close as I can to what they want. And to have them walk away from the divorce looking towards their future in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they are financially stable, that they have the time with their child that they want, that they're able to move on from there in a positive way.
Are there, like, crying every day in your office?
Not every day. Not every day.
I would imagine it's so emotionally charged.
It is emotionally charged sometimes. And certainly we have our days and I keep a good stock of Kleenex around the office. But it, you know, it's, we have to deal with that emotion. And part of what I try to give to my clients is an objective voice that mm-hmm. brings them out of that emotion, because I know that they're making decisions based on that emotion, and it's hard to get out of that. And right. they need me to come in and be objective and give
that
them
voice
good
of reason,
advice.
Right?
That's right.
Now, I have relatives that are in the medical profession, so they see like bad stuff, and so they're like hypochondriacs. They think everything. Are you like cynical about marriage? Like, are you around because you're
not
every
at
day?
All? Not at all. I think, you know, a good marriage is one of the best relationships that anyone can have. It's the best.
But every
thing
day
in
you
life.
See people
and I'm
struggle.
I'm happily married. I do. I see people struggle, and you know, and by the same token, a bad marriage where you're very unhappy, where things are not right, is a terrible way to live.
Right.
And I, you know, I don't
have
think
you
that,
learned things like, wow, don't do that. That is
yes,
not good.
Very much, very much. I, you know, I am very, because of what I do, I'm very protective of my own marriage.
Right.
because I see the mistakes that people
right.
make. And
so what are the mistakes people make that you see kind of over and over again?
I think, you know, the biggest thing I see, and I know, you know, people expect me to say, well, you know, there's cheating, there's,
right.
you know,
but is it like
but that's
taking
not really
things
what it
for granted, taking the other
I think,
for granted?
I think that the biggest thing I see is people stopping, they stop their communication with their spouse. They stop talking. They take it for granted that that spouse knows what they want or knows what they
right.
need. And when that communication stops, that's when all the bad things start happening. That's when the cheating happens. That's when the you know, the drug abuse happens or the drinking happens, because they're not getting what they need from that other spouse. And I think that's, if you can catch it there.
But what is the trigger typically that has caused them to kind of stop communicating?
You know, I think that's very individual. I mean, sometimes it's just our busy lives. Sometimes it's that, you know, something happened. There's a money problem. There's a...
So there could be like a stressor on the relationship.
A stressor.
And then one of the parties just like internalizes everything. And then the other one is like in the dark and thinks everything's fine. And the other person's got this big burden and they can't
And they just don't
themselves.
Communicate. Yeah, I think that's what happens. And
wow.
then after a while, it seems that people give up.
And they
you know, and that's, I think, and those are the saddest cases. Because
right.
usually one side of it has made up their mind a lot sooner than the other side.
Yeah.
And it's shocking to that other spouse.
Yeah,
it's really sad.
We had a neighbor that was the case where the one person had decided 6 months in their own head, and then the other person's like, this is news to me, you know, and they're
right.
like blindsided
and
by the whole
thing. And those
are
tough. Those are tough because it, you know, that person that was blindsided, it takes them a while to catch up.
Right, exactly. And, they're like,
and they, it's very difficult for that person for, you know, until they can, you know, accept what's happening to them.
So now when you're talking to that person that's going through this, are you, do you, your first move to try to see if they can work it out, or you just say like where you're at and this, we just go boldly forward from this point forward?
Right. I don't try and do marriage counseling, because
right.
that my
so
job,
they're there to get a divorce.
Yes.
So you're there to help them get a divorce.
Right. My job is to get people divorced
right.
because that's what they come to me to do.
Right.
Now, if somebody's unsure when they come to me, you know, I'm not the person who pushes them towards that divorce. If they, you know, if they want me to wait or if they want to take some time to do counseling, I try to get them to a good person or whatever they need for that. But if once they come to meet with me, I mean, my job is to get that divorce done for them in the best possible
right.
way.
Because since they're your client, then you're advocating for them and
that's
whatever
right.
their interests are.
That's right.
Now, why be involved in ProWin? Is this a part of your marketing, or this is your way of helping the community? How does ProWin fit into this?
Well, it's a little of both. ProWin is, of course, part of my marketing because
a lot of women are there.
Yes, a lot of women are there. It's a great
50%
network.
50% get divorced.
That's right. It's a great network.
Just math.
Well, not only that, but, you know, in general, you know, when women are going through a crisis, when they're having a problem, they're going to turn to their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And the women in ProWin being the professionals, I mean, they're women who their friends trust. And so it's a great network for me as far as marketing my practice, because those women are going to know professionals that their friends need,
right.
and they're going to get in touch
other women,
with me.
Even if they're
and
not going
women.
Through
that's
the
right,
divorce.
That's
so,
right.
So in the meetings, do you have a chance to show your expertise and to share like some of the benefits of working with you and how you can help these, you know, not necessarily the members of ProWin, but the friends of the members of ProWin?
We, as part of ProWin, we have a monthly lunch where we talk about professional issues in like a roundtable sort of discussion. So I do have a chance to talk to all the members about what I do and how I would handle certain situations and things like that. So that's really very helpful about ProWin. You know, it's, and hopefully the members take that back to their friends and will get in touch with me.
Now, your background is that you're obviously a lawyer, but you have your bachelor's in math?
I do. I do. People think that's kind of a strange combination. But and really in college, I think maybe my thought was that maybe I would end up being a high school math teacher or something like that. But law school sort of called me and I ended up there. But it really is, math is a lot about problem solving.
Right.
And that's what I do every day for people.
And you can probably help them in the finance part of this.
It is. It is. I am not, you know, I'm one of the few lawyers that's not afraid of spreadsheets and math.
Exactly.
So it works for me.
So now, can you share a story or something that you've been able to help somebody and that was really meaningful to you in your career? I mean, obviously don't name any names, but something that you really feel like you positively impacted a situation?
You know, one of the most meaningful things I do, I think, is help people become better parents, more supportive parents. Often I can coach someone, and I, you know, in one of my cases, I represented a dad who really was serious about having custody, but he had, you know, he had a little bit of a learning curve because he had not been the primary caretaker of that child. And over time, I was able to coach him, you know, to really do a much better job and be very involved in his kids' lives. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the case, he ended up with a joint custody situation where he had his kids, you know, a few days out, you know, half the week. And he's become such a terrific parent, and that has been a great thing for me to see. And I love it when my clients, you know, kind of stay in touch with me and I get to see that happen.
Does that happen?
For them. Very much. I mean, I have several clients who stay in touch with me for years and, you know, let me know what's happening with their kids and their career and things like that. And that's been a really rewarding part of my practice.
Now, you do some speaking about just family law in general?
I do a little bit of speaking at seminars and
on the topics
sort
of,
on topics of family law,
like,
yes.
And like kind of the nuts and bolts of alimony and things like
very
that.
Very much, yeah.
Now, when you're doing those talks, are there anything that, like, is there, what's kind of a primer on alimony?
Well, alimony is one of those questions that I get a lot because it's a scary word to a lot of people who think they might have to pay it.
And is it just whoever makes more
and,
has to pay.
But it really no, not necessarily. And alimony is very much about a person's need, whichever spouse is making less money or not working. But it also looks at that other party who's going to pay, their ability to pay. Mm-hmm. So it's not about, you know, taking all the money from one side or the other. It's really about rehabilitating that person in the marriage who has not been out working or is not able to support themselves.
Is alimony for life?
Lifetime alimony is very rare these days. It does happen, but it's rare.
Is it typically to the, when the kid is 18 or like what's the end date?
There's no set end date for alimony.
It's just, that's all negotiated?
It's all negotiated, or
I mean,
if things get messy, a judge decides that. So there's no set guidelines for that. It's really just a look at everybody's individual situation and what they need.
Now, if you were to put a percentage on it, what percent of divorces are kind of amicable and what percent are kind of feisty and...
Well, that's a little hard to answer because it's all divorces are a little bit feisty.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell you about 80 to 85% settle without going to court. So that's a big percentage. And often we can do that either just with settlement negotiations or through mediation.
And for you, ProWin has been a positive impact in your career?
Oh, ProWin's been very positive. The women that I've met there have been really good resources for me in my practice, as we talked about before.
Right.
You know, I like to have a network of professionals.
Oh, so it's helped you with those trusted advisors?
Very
maybe
much.
Maybe introducing you to, because you get to see them in action kind of, well, not do the, what they do, but you can see them in a kind of real life situation.
That's right. That's right. And hear a lot about what they do in their lives every day and you know, what kind of work they do.
And is that a meeting you look forward to every month?
I do.
Good stuff.
All right. Where can our listeners go to learn more?
You can find me on our firm's website. It's Bovis, B-O-V-I-S, Kyle, K-Y-L-E.com.
All right. Stay with us, will you? We got one more guest we're going to visit with. Okay. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us, she is a speaker, an author, a radio host. Okay, maybe that credential doesn't mean
probably
a lot.
I wouldn't have known that.
Please join me in welcoming to the program Miss June Klein. How you doing, sunshine?
I am amazing. I'm June Klein, fine as wine.
Well, you've been very patient, but I've seen you nodding through the other segments and taking
you've committed
notes
to this thing next month.
You're right. You're signed up.
I have had to bite my tongue. There are so many great one-liners that I just so wanted to play with here. But
well, now it's your turn.
I was good. I was good.
So what inspired you to become a speaker and take that line of work? Stone here couldn't hack it. He had to get a job.
Oh, well, there you have. There are those. There are. You know, I stumbled into it just like most everybody does. I worked in student financial aid for about 16 years.
Oh, so I might be calling you.
Well, that's where all the jokes come from, I'm sure. Anything
it's,
you,
it's the truth.
Sense of humor comes from.
I started laughing as a financial aid director at some of the stuff that people were putting on their applications. And it was crazy, and I started to collect what I called student bloopers, which turned into IMOs, idiot moments, and I started a file on those, and next thing I knew, there was huge conflict in the industry way back when direct lending was coming in, and there was friends that had been friends for 20 years were now just at war with each other, and I thought, somebody needs to lighten this up. And so I volunteered to give a speech in front of about 300 of my closest peers and friends, and I had never.
You'd never given a speech
never,
before?
Never, no. And, oh, my God, I was standing on the edge of this platform. I mean, I'm, you know, 3 or 4 feet up in the air and looking out at this sea of people, 300 people, 599 eyes looking back at me. Now, Miss Mathematician over here is...
So it's plus or minus one?
Yeah. The one that was missing was my girlfriend had her hand cupped over her one eye going, oh my God, I can't believe she's doing this. And I couldn't either, but at the end of the day, it was the end of the speech, was a standing ovation, and a woman came running up to me and said, how much would you charge to do this at our state association? And I jokingly said, how much have you got? And she said, we have $1,000 honorarium, and of course we'd pay your travel. And I said, I am so there for you, because I was going to say $50. You know, pay for the gas, I'll go. So I had no idea there was a professional world of speaking. And it took me an additional 2 years to find that. So I was running around for about 2 years just sharing my student bloopers and making people laugh.
And then it's evolved to what you're doing now?
It turned into an entire career.
So now you are with the Open Heart Communications. That's your firm?
That's me. That's my company. I am the owner.
The owner of it. And so what is it? What's the service you provide? Is it speaking?
It is.
Or you're in writing and...
Speaking, writing, and also communication skills with a humorous twist.
So you teach them or you
I
just...
do.
Or you're just the talent?
Yes.
All of that.
I do both. And I do believe that's a unique blend that I bring. I love this stuff and I study it so much. There are specific things I've learned over 23 years of speaking that I can share. And when I coach others now, I really can help them get it. And I even created comedic styles for comedic styles that it helps to know what style you are and what room you're in, what that basic style
is. So what
is.
Are the four styles?
You want to know the four styles?
Is it a secret or I got to pay $1,000?
Yes, absolutely.
How did you know it was four? Did you just take a stab at that?
She or said
you
four. I'm a good listener.
Okay. And you're also a good interviewer. I'm like, you know, I wish you'd work on this a little bit, you know. So you do a great job
well,
and enjoyed the questions and the interviews that you've had. That was the sucking up portion.
Excellent job. Is that one of the styles?
It is.
Ingratiating
it
the
is.
Style?
It is. But the four styles, they start out with the crazies because they're the ones that'll do anything and wear something on their head or act really stupid and silly. And they're doing physical Jim Carrey kind of humor, mm-hmm. so it's Jim Carrey crazy. And then the next one is the Carings, and I think of Bill Cosby. All four icons, they're built around icons. Mm-hmm. Bill Cosby, and he's always talking about family and friends and Jell-O and kids and all that stuff. And these are the people that you really wish they'd shut up talking about their kids and whatever happened to them that weekend, but they just can't. And then the third one is Cerebrals, and that's based on Johnny Carson. If you remember, if you're old enough to remember Johnny Carson, if not, Google him. He's online. And that's when this joke is so smart. They're very erudite people. Do you know what that means?
I would guess smart.
If you don't know, you're not one. And so these are the people that their humor is really literally too hip for the room, and they wonder why they don't get a laugh and people don't laugh at them. They're laughing at themselves on the inside, but people are going, what? And then last category is the caustics, and that is Andrew Dice Clay. Do you remember?
That was convenient that they all are C's.
Did you notice alliteration? I love me some alliteration, absolutely. And that way people can retain it a little more. But those are the people. Don Rickles, he's a lovable curmudgeon. You know, he's
curmudgeon, that's another one.
Yes.
You want to throw that at five?
We could go to five.
We can.
But his name doesn't start with a C.
No,
so he's
that's
out.
Why, yeah. And just so you know, you may already know, one of the best kept secrets and or ideas in comedy is that the last syllable of the punchline should be a hard sounding word, a K or a K sound. So there's a reason behind just about everything I do.
The science of comedy.
It really is.
So now, what was the last speech you gave?
The last talk you've given? Oh, to 1,000 counselors, high school counselors in Utah, and it's interesting that...
So like career counselors?
High school counselors.
Like psychiatrist counselors? What is a counselor?
High school counselors. So in high schools, do you remember high school?
Very vaguely.
They're,
it's been a long, long time.
Apparently, they have counselors now that help them with curriculum and also problem.
So if they're having a problem, they
problem,
go. Right.
Yes. And as a matter of fact.
Guidance counselors.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
So that was the first time I ever took an audience of 1,000 and divided them into the four quadrants.
You made them get up?
I made them get up, get out of their seats. And go, excuse me, go to their quadrants. And then I run around and I play with what they would say. I have different exercises that gives them an opportunity to be really active and involved. And bless their hearts, they're so true. Yeah, they did. And not only that, I've had, and this is the sign of a good speech and a good day when people start calling you and asking you to come and do another whatever.
Right.
So I'm already booked on the one they want on the 30th.
So you come back a return engagement.
Well, not to them, but excuse me, why is it that when you get on the radio,
the hairball,
you know, it's like, I feel like, you know, sorry, I digress. But they want me for additional events. Mm-hmm. And so the one that I received yesterday, I'm excited about they want me to speak at their Troubled Youth Conference. And at first that really scared me because it's like, oh my God, I can't imagine anything worse trying to.
Bunch of troubled youth.
Yeah, getting them to laugh. However, they are so impressed with the comedic styles and what it meant for them. They're like, our kids have got to know this. Mm-hmm. And so that's way cool. And I'm terrified of kids because I don't have any. Apparently, God wanted us to have money and travel. And so I don't know nothing about birth and no babies. But I'm a great aunt. And one of my friends recently has come up with the idea and the concept. He's like, you know, the kids do need this. And he said, you're Auntie June. Just go be Auntie June. And I thought, I might could handle that one. So.
Now, when they ask you to do something like that, are you creating a talk from scratch, or are you just taking elements of things you've already planned for other people? How do you...
Never create comedy from scratch.
Never?
I mean, no, that's not true. That's not true.
At some point you have to.
Well, and especially in the moment. And I love your working on your now.
Thank you.
That is so much where... Lori, where you have to get, that's where the humor comes from, and the more you can stay present. So let me contradict what I just said, do be in the now, and some of the funniest stuff that'll happen will be right there in the audience if you have the guts and the courage to pull it off. And if you have the guts and the courage to fail, because sometimes it doesn't happen, and then there you are looking like, you know, you laid an egg and there it is. But yes, for the most part, I have core stories, but I have so many. I interview the people and find out what it is they want, what do they want them to go away with, and then I look at the stories that will be able to magnify that point or make the point.
So when they told you about these troubled youths, and so you sit down and go, okay, I got to talk to you for an hour or a period of time to kind of flesh out what you're trying to accomplish, what do you want? How do you want them to feel at the end of this? Like
exactly. And it's usually not an hour. I mean, it can be because sometimes it's a committee and you're on a speakerphone and waiting for everybody to approve you. And some of them are really, really interesting processes. But somebody is on the line, especially if they don't know you and they don't know your style of humor. They want to make sure that they're going to have a job when you leave.
Right. You can't embarrass them.
Exactly. But that's part of the beauty of what I do. I get people to understand what their basic style is. We all have all of them, by the way. If you get a mama in a corner about her kid, then you might get some caustic. It might be humor, but it's going to be caustic. Mm-hmm. So we're all that, and yet we're predominantly in one area. And the way this came about, I gave four different speeches, four different days in 1 week, and I had such four different reactions that I thought, good Lord, what on earth happened here? And I started breaking it down and trying to look at, that's where the styles came from, and I've discovered that 250 engineers, I love you guys and gals, there were five women in the audience, but if you were to, the way an engineer laughs, if you fold your hand across your chest and give one little puff of air.
That means they're rolling on the floor.
That's funny. That's funny. They're out loud. And two, in quick succession, you are knocking them out.
Killed the room, right?
But they weren't letting it out. And it was the longest 40-minute speech I'd ever had, and I thought I was dying. And sure enough, at the end, they formed a receiving line. 15, 20 men came up and told me stories that if I had had a microphone, oh my gosh, I would not ever. It was just so rich. They were so rich with their stories, but they sure weren't going to tell it or experience anything.
They didn't want to be vulnerable in front of the group.
Exactly. So you have to know if that's your boss or if that's your team or if you are that person and they're trying to be fun and have craziness because they're in the crazy block, then there are issues that are automatically going to happen over humor.
So now when you sell yourself to a business association as a humorist, is there an ROI on that? Like, how do they make a business case? Yeah, we should hire that humorist. That'll be good for what?
10 minutes. I love that. And that's the title of my new book, is The ROI of LOL. It took me a while and looking at the timeline of my life to figure out there is an ROI of LOL. Every time I have made someone laugh in a strategic setting.
An angel gets his wings.
I'm using that. Okay, that's mine now. All right. That's good.
Well, that's another rule, too, right? You can borrow, appropriate good content.
Well, yeah, the formula goes, Lee said every time, and then it's somebody said, and then, like I was saying, I mean, that's a standard.
That's the evolution.
That's
of
a standard
joke,
old joke, yeah. But yeah, it is the ROI, and I really get it and want people to get it that when you make somebody laugh out loud, you're changing their brain chemistry. It's huge. They remember you. Don't you know people that you light up every time they come in because you know it's going to be fun? And are you that person for somebody else?
But you think you can train someone to be funny?
Yes and no. They got to want it, and they got to want to work. One of my best examples, just lost Joan Rivers. And 100 years ago, I got to interview Goober. Do you remember George Lindsay?
I do.
That's Stone's World.
It's a long time.
It's my genre. I know Goober.
Thank you.
No, I'm
Thank
Goober.
You. He had the opportunity. He told me the story about seeing Joan Rivers. They worked at the same cafe. She was waitressing and waiting for her opportunity to get on stage. And the first night he saw her perform, she bombed. She died. Ran into the ladies' room. They could hear her crying. And at the next set, she was up again, and he said she was relentless, and she just kept doing, well, the rest of that's history. So yes, can you learn it? But you gotta wanna. And when I'm coaching people, and I love to coach women, I think we get a bad rap on humor a lot, and also I think it's the most underutilized skill that anybody does, but particularly women. We're much less willing to step out there and to be vulnerable. And so I'm working on that.
So now you work with speakers to help them add humor to their talk? Is that part of your...
Yes, I'm a coach, and what's interesting is I had a client recently, and she was... We were getting the facts and everything together, and she said, well, I already have my speech. And I said, well, you think you do. And she rocked back. She's a professional woman, and she said, oh, like, little, you know, really. And so, sure enough, I get the speech, and what has to happen is you're looking for a thread that you can run through it. You're looking for a place that you can have callbacks and that you can build on that idea. And then you want it to circle all the way back around to the top. And so we had to totally... just about throw out the baby with the bathwater, and that happens just about every time.
Really, because they're just taking kind of disparate thoughts, yes, and just piling them in and saying, and that's 20 minutes or 40 minutes, and then I'm done.
And concepts.
Right.
I mean, and she had so many different concepts that it was it was just crazy.
Well, maybe if she can make them spell a word.
That's exactly right. So can I share mine?
Yeah, fire away.
At the end of the month, I'll be speaking at a huge breast cancer awareness in Savannah, and I'm already looking and thinking, now what do I need of all the spelling, the words that I have, what can I use? Well, one that I use all the time is ape, and I have people literally go ape. And I had these counselors go ape, 1,000 of them, and so I have them shaking out their hands, ooh, drop to the ground, act like you're eating grass. They're doing all this, and they will do it. And that's part
of just for you, though, right? Yeah. That's not for them.
That's
your own personal
satisfaction. I usually say, I love doing that. That's just for me. But that's one of the things they were taking back to the classroom.
Right.
Because it's that powerful. So awareness is the A. And I'll be talking with this group about the awareness of the power of laughter, especially around anything that's catastrophic, such as cancer. And then permission is the P, which is to give yourself permission to lighten up and to play with the harshness or the hardness of some of life's chaos and craziness. And then the F is for, the E is, I just blew my own joke. The
I'm like,
E,
the F.
The E is for fun.
There you go.
See, eyebrows. I love it because everybody's going, huh? And that's what it's about. You have to be willing to make a change, exchange, if you have, for the anal ones that have to have, that do the math.
Need closure.
And you
right.
need to eat, and exchange something that you're expecting for something that's unexpected.
Right.
And that will give you, that's the formula. They'll remember ape, and they'll go ape.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll act silly with that. Well, and especially the crazies. Mm-hmm. Cerebrals, not so much. They're still folding their hands over their chest, you know, but anyway.
That's the best acrostic ever. I mean, my entire speaking, and you're right, I didn't hack it long term, but was built a lot on using acrostics. Sometimes acrostics I would share, sometimes acrostics I would just keep internally to keep myself on track. But I've never done that, but I'm stealing that. Next time somebody lets me do a talk, I'm doing a switcheroo on them.
Well, you don't use ape. I'll come find you. I've got a lawyer friend. I got a new lawyer friend over here. Yeah.
What a creative idea, and what a marvelous way to keep them all on their toes. Is this book out yet?
I'm in the middle of writing it right now. It's,
okay.
It's painful, but I think... My goal is to first of the year to have this done. I'm forcing myself every day for the last 90 days. I had to write 300 words minimum every day, and of course that goes to 600, 700 or whatever. So I'm up to over 30,000 words, and I think it takes about 60. And then what I'm going to do, that keynote with the 1,000 people, that was an hour and 50 minute keynote.
Wow.
So you've got to get them active. You've got to get them doing something. I mean, you can't just be a talking head up there for that length of time. But I'll transcribe that, because that was some really, that was the whole thing in a nutshell, really, in a speech. And that's a great way to get a book, by the way. If you're speaking, then go ahead and
people
get
it transcribed. Writer's block, but they don't get talker's block.
They don't. Mm. I don't.
So if somebody went to learn more, where do they go?
JuneKline.com. June, like the month.
And Klein, like
with a C,
C-L-I-N-E.
I usually say Klein as in Patsy, but then they start calling me Patsy.
Patsy. Mm. So JuneKlein.com. And then you can see, are there clips of you speaking? Is there?
There are. Excuse me. And another point, they will get to see me speak. I do a one-woman show now where I just take all the IMOs and put them together and make it crazy and fun. And I have to credit ProWin with that opportunity because I'd been thinking it and feeling it and scared of it for many years. And I went to my first ProWin mixer last fall, I think it was November, and we were at the Red Door Playhouse. And I walked in there and I went, oh my gosh, this is the place. I mean, it sounds kind of, you know, like biblical, but it was like, I can do this here. So I did my first show April Fool's Eve last year. Mm-hmm. I'm taking it on the road. So I did Price, Utah, which nobody knows where that is. And then
you had a lot of work in Utah.
I do. I lived there for a while. Oh. So I have one advocate there, one dear, dear friend.
They must have some power because she's booking you pretty good.
She's a teacher and she's always offering my name up. So, but I will be back on November 9th, Sunday. It's a matinee about 4:00. I will be doing my one woman show at Red Door Playhouse again. So.
So you enjoy that? The one, because that's a little departure, right, of a typical keynote?
The first one, I was terrified. I mean, really, seriously, you can make people laugh for an hour and 15 minutes and hold their attention and all. I was terrified.
That's a lot of pressure, right?
It was huge. Because I'm not a comedian. I'm a humorist. I don't do jokes. I do stories. Mm-hmm. But they're hysterical. So I thought, okay, if you're ever going to do it, now's the time. And
but
it
do you attack well. That the same way you do a keynote? Is it structured the same way?
Yeah, I just took out all my, I left the content out.
And it's just the fluff.
It's just the fluff. And one of my friends.
The fun stuff.
One of my friends, I said, I don't know if I can do this without content. She said, oh, you never had any content anyway. You might as well go ahead.
So, go for it.
That worked.
All right. That's June Klein, CLINE.com. And you can find more of her stuff there and book her, right?
Book it, Dano.
It has your calendar.
Let's book
it. You can book right there on the spot.
Yes. And I do want to say the way I started Fine as Wine, that ended up getting me a keynote. So man. ROI of LOL, you bet. Yeah.
That's
how
next.
Do you start off?
Mm-hmm. That's 2015.
There you go.
Be ready. All right. Well, thank you all for being part of the show. And ProWin, if you're interested in learning more, go to ProWin.com. They have monthly meetings. It seems like a lot of fun. This is where the movers and shakers, the ladies of Atlanta, are hanging out. And that's where you should be too. ProWin.com. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.